Brianne, after I lose a game, it's not a rare thing for me to receive several Venmo requests because angry bettors and fellow students want me to repay them.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Gaming News Canada show. As always, I'm your host, Steve McAllister. Since we started covering the world of sports betting and gaming back in February 2021, we've spoken often about responsible gambling and the need for all stakeholders in this regulated industry to protect people from experiencing mental health, financial, and other problems. Recent developments have put problem gambling front and center in the industry, including in the newish North American regulated marketplace, so we wanted to hear from an expert in the field. Over the past 11 years, Brianne Dhur-Shawal has held senior roles with the Massachusetts Council on Compulsive Gambling, the National Council on Problem Gambling, and Epic Risk Management. Today, she is the founder and CEO of Dhur-Shawal Consulting LLC and is also a member of the Board of Directors for Kinbridge Behavioral Health. Brianne, we're extremely pleased to welcome you to the podcast and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel incredibly honored to be here and to be discussing one of my favorite things, responsible gambling.
Well, it feels like this interview is overdue. I mean, we've I think as I mentioned when I reached out to you to get you on the podcast, responsible gambling's been kind of front and center as a topic we've discussed in this form, really going back to our days on when we did Clubhouse shows back in 2021. But we really haven't had someone with your credentials. And so I'd like to start by going back to the spring of 2013. You're about 3 years into a gig with an organization called the National Association of Development Companies. And then literally less than 6 months later, you're the legislative director for the US-based National Council on Problem Gambling. What led you to the career path that you're walking today?
So actually, when I left the National Association of Development Companies, which was a nonprofit that represented small businesses across the US, I ended up moving back to Massachusetts where I was from. And that was how I first got connected with the Mass Council on Compulsive Gambling, now the Mass Council on Gaming and Health. And look, the truth of the matter is they were a tiny nonprofit that was run in Massachusetts, where there was nothing more than a lottery. Simply, Massachusetts had just passed some legislation to expand into casino gaming. And this tiny nonprofit that had just raised enough private funds to say, hey, I think we need someone who has experience in government relations, membership, policy, to come on. This is a fairly new thing for us. We have no idea if it warrants having a policy person. And really, it was very serendipitous. I was looking for a new opportunity. I loved my work in government relations and policy, although I had been federal in nature. And we just found each other and said, you know, if we take a chance on one another and you give me the opportunity to learn what I need to know about gambling and problem gambling, I'll teach you how to create a comprehensive government relations and policy program. And the rest is kind of history, right? Because, you know, 2013 is a really important year, not just because that was when I got into it, but because the DSM-5, you know, kind of the Bible of sorts for addiction and mental health, that was the year that they had determined gambling addiction was an addiction the way alcohol and substance misuse is. So not only was it a very opportune time for the state of Massachusetts as they expanded their gambling offerings, but it was also a new day for this addiction, a day when now all of a sudden services should be more readily afforded to those in need. And I feel incredibly privileged to have been the first in Massachusetts and then in 2018 becoming the first to also represent the National Council on Problem Gambling just a few months after PASPA.
I was going to say, it was, you know, there's so much talk right now. I don't know if crisis is the right way to put it, but I want to get your thoughts on what the current state of problem gambling is in North America. But was 2018 somewhat of a turning point with the overturning of PASPA? And you know, where, I guess the first question, Brianne, is how would you term the state of problem gambling right now?
So I think that it was absolutely a turning point for North America, because it wasn't just that gambling all of a sudden hadn't existed and now it was going to. It's that gambling existed in isolation of sorts. It wasn't normalized and it wasn't pervasive the way it now is within our cultures. All of a sudden, we went from you got to get in your car and get to a casino to have a few hours of gambling fun to now we all pretty much have access anytime, day or night, from our mobile phones. And it's being pushed in very aggressive ways across advertising platforms, online, billboards, radio, TV, right? The whole gamut. And so for me, it's about raising awareness that problem gambling existed before PAFSA. Research is very clear that gambling addiction and problem gambling carries with it the highest rates of shame and stigma. It's why we call it the hidden addiction. It's not that this is all of a sudden this new thing that arose because the Supreme Court said, hey, states, you can go ahead and legalize this if you want. It was happening. And it was creating havoc and destruction in our homes and our communities and people's lives before PAFSA. But when we juxtapose that fact about shame and stigma in an existing and combine that with the knowledge that anytime you introduce a new form of gambling, you're going to simultaneously increase the problems. And the reality was that because this is a hidden addiction and because it is not well spoken of and really not invested in, now Canada, comparative to the US, does a far better job of investing in and trying to prevent gambling addiction. But our federal government right now does nothing to address this issue. It's left up to the states. And we have 9 states doing nothing. The reality is we expanded gambling so quickly without the proper infrastructure and education to be able to minimize and mitigate the harm. So it's not that this is new. It's not that this wasn't an issue or a concern prior to PAFSA. It's pretty much like we poured gasoline on something that was percolating under the surface. And now we really need to address this issue. There's a reason this is coming up in other contexts and other podcasts that have nothing to do with responsible gambling. It's an issue.
When you talk about Canada, Brianne, I mean, obviously, the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation, they've been recognized for the work they've done on responsible gambling. The British Columbia Lottery Corporation has their GameSense product has been, they have a partnership with BetMGM, I believe, in the U.S. And what is it about Canada that they've kind of got, you know, it's obviously not perfect, but what have they got? What have we got right here at home?
You have a lot that's going right. And some of it has to do with the cultural differences, right? Here in the United States, having healthcare is not a God-given right. It is a privilege. And we have many people who don't have access to adequate, you know, physical health care, mental health care. There is a different belief system and infrastructure in place in Canada where you believe in prioritizing things like access to mental health care and just general health care, right? So stark but important difference here. When we're talking about something that is not visible, right? You can't see someone who has a gambling problem the way you might be able to smell alcohol or see nuances of being under the influence of a substance. And so the fact that your country prioritizes mental health in many ways puts you at a huge advantage comparative to lots of other locations across the globe. But you have also shown that even before gambling had migrated to the mobile sports betting realm, you were already investing in things like research and prevention programs. You bring up a few of them, GameSense being one that I'm very familiar with. GameSense was actually contracted in Massachusetts at the time that I was working there to go into all of our casinos, you know, the first of its kind. And by the way, Massachusetts remains one of the only states in the U.S. to have anything of the sort. It's almost an anomaly in Canada, right, when we don't hear of some type of investment in prevention or research or services for those that are struggling with mental health or problem gambling. It's not to say that you're not still struggling and need to do better, but you are far beyond many, many of us here in the U.S. and even some countries abroad.
Yeah, some folks in the industry here, Brianna, will also point to the Responsible Gambling Council and the work that Shelley White and her team has done, and and also the RG Check accreditation program, which operators in Ontario have to go through, and there's a renewal process as well. The other thing I'll just point out too, Brianna, you mentioned sports betting. I think sometimes, and we're guilty of this because of our background in the sports media and sports space, is that online casino represents over 80% of customer play in the Ontario regulated market. And personally, I mean, I'm one of these people, I have no problem betting maybe 10 bucks a week on a Leaf game or Scottie Scheffler to win the Masters. Online casino really scares me, and there's a reason why I don't play online games, because I think it's so accessible and so easy to play. And so I think, again, in this marketplace where we've seen the influence that online casino has, that there is a bit of a two-headed monster, if you want to call it that.
Absolutely. I think that you bring up two really salient points. The first being about sports betting and its migration to mobile and people feeling like, oh, I can just throw $10 on it. And many can gamble without experiencing harm. On the other hand, it's really important to have the education and self-awareness and be making informed choices that you're able to engage safely with these products, because there's this wonderful piece of literature out there that talks about how, because we revere sports as this wonderful elite thing, that often the brain naturally suppresses the risks that accompany gambling because of its correlation or linkage to something that we revere so highly. It's just kind of natural brain behavior to kind of take something that comes with risk and suppress its inherent risk because it's linked to something so positive. So that is also some of the reasons we're seeing problematic rates with sports betting at 2 to 3 times that of other types of games. That being said, you bring up the next big thing, at least in the US, right? I know that you have online gaming in some markets already. We do as well. We've got 7 here in the United States. And similarly to you, we're seeing about, 70, 80% of revenue coming from that vertical. But more worrisome, Connecticut recently put out a study that highlighted that 70% of revenues were coming from roughly 7% of the population, 1.8% of them having a gambling problem and the rest being considered at risk. So it does call into question, at least I believe it warrants a healthy discussion about, is this business model what we desire? Is this really a business model that's A, sustainable, and B, healthy for our communities? There are a lot of moral and ethical questions that often come up to policymakers about putting a slot machine in everybody's pockets. We are starting to see some research emerge within the UK and other markets that have had it for a while, that things like live dealer gambling tends to attract a higher risk population. Are these things we really want to be pushing? With access, with accessibility around the clock, with things like cashless payments, which are pretty common here in the US, it is more uncommon for a state to say you can't use a credit card than to be able to use one now for gambling. We're starting to find ourselves having to have some really uncomfortable, but arguably important discussions when we talk about two things: the overall safety of the gaming market, a very common term used in Europe, safer gambling, not responsible gambling, and two, sustainability. Is a market where the majority, overwhelming majority of revenues are coming from a small percentage of people who are experiencing harm, really sustainable? And the ethical imperative here, is that the type of business we want to be building?
I guess if you want to put a positive spin on, Brianna, the fact that I know there's a real push by operators in the U.S. right now to expand regulated iGaming. I think it's 6 or 7 states right now that have legal markets. But this does give the states that don't have iGaming but are looking at it, New York comes to mind right off the top of my head, it does give them a chance to make sure the proper mechanisms are in place.
Absolutely. I will 100% give it to the industry. A lot of the bills that we're seeing offered up that the industry supports do have inclusions for things like problem gambling funding at levels I had not previously seen. They do often talk about regulatory infrastructure and controls. Now, do I think that they account for everything that should be done? No. Do I feel it's incumbent upon advocates like myself and policymakers to challenge the status quo and highlight what we're seeing in other markets to ensure that doesn't have a trickle, I wouldn't call it trickle down, right? But trickle across across the US and other markets, of course. But you're absolutely right. This is one of those times that I am seeing far more interest in talking about problem responsible gambling than 6 years ago when we were doing this for the first time with sports betting.
Brianne, who's right now, who do you think is most susceptible to running into trouble with gambling, be it sports betting and or iGaming? Again, there's been so much in the U.S., especially around students, college students, and we've seen regulators who want to ban betting, prop betting, and some of the harassment around student athletes competing in NCAA sports. And I think there's a lot of concern in Canada as well about problem gambling among youth. But what worries you the most right now? What target or what demographic?
So not to seem redundant, but all of the evidence does suggest actually the normalization of these products and the influence it has on the younger generation is incredibly worrisome. I'm really proud of some of my work in states where I push to have problem gambling incorporated into health curriculum, the way we talk about drugs and alcohol. Now, Virginia is the only state, which is where I live, and I'm very excited to know that that is a piece of legislation that's been signed into law that will happen, without fear moving forward. Other states do put it into their curriculum. And I think that's really important. We talk to children from a young and impressionable age, drinking comes with risks. So we need to delay that as long as possible. We have to talk to kids about gambling. They're seeing it, they're reading it, they're hearing it, it's everywhere. So let's not make it more taboo. Let's talk to them about how to do this. I think that because we've neglected to do that, some of it because we just haven't had gambling the way we have it now, but also because we know that college kids are more inclined to push boundaries, right? Test limits, try new things. And often college kids are broke. So college kids are going to be like, wow, what a great thing. I know my team. I know sports. They've got the ego. They've got the impulsivity. And they have the desire to make money. And they see this as a way to make money. And they can quickly find themselves in trouble. And how many parents are giving their kids credit cards for an emergency, right? And this is an emergency. I need cash. I'll make a few bucks. And then I'll be good for the week. I think that it is not malice. I don't believe that the industry is necessarily targeting these young, vulnerable people per se. Now that we've seen a lot of these college deals rolled back, that was incredibly worrisome to me when that was the trend, right? Gambling operators forming deals with colleges. But nonetheless, they have to be aware that their products really resonate and appeal to this otherwise vulnerable demographic. So I'm worried about the college kids upwards to like their late 20s, right? When disposable income is not really a plenty, there's these beliefs that this is a way to make money. It's all those things. But you bring up another thing I'm very worried about, and it has nothing to do with addiction at all. It has to do with the mental health of the people being bet on. It is so hard to be a college kid. It's really hard to be a student athlete that's getting a scholarship to not only maintain your grades, but to perform. Now imagine turning on the TV and seeing the lines on yourself. Or I'm very, very privileged to work with some college kids who are struggling with the negative consequences of a legal, accessible betting market. And some of them will share anecdotes like the following. I can't go to class for 2 weeks because of what my fellow students will say. I don't go on social media anymore. I cut it all down because it was getting out of control. Brianne, after I lose a game, it's not a rare thing for me to receive several Venmo requests because angry bettors and fellow students want me to repay them. These aren't things that are easy for student athletes to be dealing with. And, you know, it's not that the pros are not also facing this. I mean, we heard in Ohio, the Cavaliers coach came out and talked about how bettors were crossing the line and bringing up his kids, and just this is getting a little bit out of control. But pros have a lot more resources, and they have a team around them. They most often have age too as well going for them, a little bit more life experience. So this is all to say, I do believe that we're facing two very important things right now. It's an inflection point for problem and responsible gambling policies. And I do believe it's an opportune time for us to get serious about how we're going to handle the mental health of those that are now being bet on all the time.
You also wonder too, Brianne, if there's just there's a criminal or you know, charging these threats of harassment and abuse that are going on, where whether it's at the federal level, the state level, that there needs to be more due diligence when it comes to monitoring this type of harassment, because it's criminal activity.
Agreed 100%. And I think that I have a healthy appreciation for both sides of this argument, right? The NCAA has been very bullish in saying, let's just ban the prop bets. That's not going to also take care of the problem. I hear the industry airing concerns, well, this is going to push people into the illegal market. It would be patently false, though, to say that we have not seen an increase, because people are more forward and comfortable in exercising their rights to harass or vocalize opposition in a legal marketplace. So we are seeing an increase because by default, we're saying the government says this is fine. And that's an issue to me. I don't believe that prohibition will in any way solve our issues of addiction. Even if it doesn't exist, addiction is still gonna plague our communities and our homes. But in this case, we have seen such a tremendous increase in the amount of harassment. We do have to, I believe, discuss, should we even allow this? But you're right. Whether we ban it or don't, we still need to do more by way of enforcement. And that's like this missing thing here that nobody's talking about. Talk about in the context of the excise tax in the United States. Several of us are pushing for federal dollars for the first time ever for problem gambling. And there is a bill that's been offered up that would codify or take half of the excise tax and put it towards problem gambling. But why aren't we talking about how the other half, or right now, the entirety of it, should be going to address enforcement of these types of issues? Now, it was enforcement for illegal gambling, but there's plenty of enforcement needs that exist right now, both at the federal and the state levels. And I think until we start to see an increase in discussions and infrastructure and just manpower to deal with that, these issues are going to continue to plague every country with legalized sports betting.
It feels like part and parcel too of something we've talked on the show about quite often, Brianne, is the discrepancies between each regulated marketplace and how easy it would be for everybody to have, you know, one set of standards across the industry. And maybe it starts at the federal level with issues like responsible gambling, but it would be easy for operators, for regulators, for probably all stakeholders in the industry, if there was a standard set of rules across the United States and in Canada, again, where our laws have essentially, the federal government's given the provinces the ability to run their own regulated gambling industries.
Yeah, you're in the exact same position we are, right? The states really have to tackle this, or the provinces on their own. And while you'll hear several people in the industry talk about how, especially the compliance people, right, how much easier it'd be if there were some standardization, the truth is, I don't believe that the industry is there. The industry is probably incredibly fearful of what a federal system would look like, especially in the U.S., right, when one state offers a tax rate of 51%. think of New York. And then, you know, you've got Arizona with pretty much 3.5% when you consider all the promotional deductions, right? So which one prevails here? What's that? There's too much benefits, I would say, arguably, in the industry's eyes right now to having a very fragmented approach. But there are those of us that are trying to tackle this from a consumer protection standpoint that really do see value in having some baseline standards for certain things. And problem, responsible gambling, enforcement, integrity, mental health for athletes, I think all of those would naturally fall in this bracket for me, where it would be nice to see some federal oversight here.
You mentioned parents a few minutes ago. And again, I remember talking to a family friend two years ago during COVID. And he mentioned that his teenage son was, had put a bit of money in a sports book account and was betting every week. And you make such a great point about the importance for parents to be educated about gambling. And I think the regulated industry, they get their backs up. And I want to talk to you about sports betting advertising and gaming advertising in a second. But people in the industry get their backs up when you hear stories about how, well, anybody can get a sportsbook account and a 12-year-old can bet on sports. And the industry will say, well, that's just not the case. There's a lot of guardrails in place for you to get an account with a regulated sports book. But what is your advice for parents, Brianne, if you've got, and again, we know, like, geez, I'm thinking the Stanley Cup playoffs start next week. And I remember sitting in the living room, my best friend's house back in like 1976, and us putting $2 down on who was going to score the overtime goal for the Toronto Maple Leafs in a game 7 against the New York Islanders. So again, it's not like betting has only been around for 5 years.
That's right. In fact, actually, you're talking to someone who used to get lottery tickets as a kid because nobody thought twice about it, right? It wasn't until actually I got into this world that I learned the dangers of giving children gambling products or gambling-like products. And I have a 10-year-old, and I often talk to my son's friends' parents about things that are even in video games, right? Well, there's gambling in that game, and that could be problematic, you know. Think about skins. Think about the things that you're buying your kids, right? So my advice to parents pretty much exists, whether we're talking about gambling or alcohol or drugs or whatever, is to just empower yourself, right? Know the lingo, know who's talking about it and how they're getting it. So one of those talking points that we hear, or those friction points between the industry and the parents, my kids can get this. No, we have controls. Nobody's talking about the fact it is very commonplace now, as children get their first phones, that parents are giving mirrored copies of their phone. And it's a way that parents feel that they can monitor their kids' behavior, right? See what app they're on. And so, I believe what's happening is it's very unintentional. Parents aren't even thinking about it. They're thinking they're doing the right thing by giving them your phone, but they're actually putting gambling in their kids' hands. I also believe overwhelmingly that parents don't understand the dangers of gambling at a young age. They think it's innocent. Think about all of our friends who talk about going with their parents to the track growing up. Well, it's not a big deal. The irony is most of them work in the industry now, right? And then they will often talk about how maybe my mom or dad had a problem or we were at the track a lot. So I think that we need to do more as a society to talk about gambling with parents and just that this isn't meant for kids. It's nothing. We're not making it like a personal attack that you've somehow, failed your kids. I think most parents just do the best that they can, right? But when I take my kids to the pediatrician, there's often walls of literature about vitamins, nutrients, keeping my kids active, combating obesity. Why is there nothing about gaming and gambling? That is where we need to be taking the level of education into our homes. And it starts with the parents.
A word from our sponsor.
Hey there, sports fans. Are you looking for fresh and fun takes on the hottest topics in Canadian sports? Well, we've got just what you need. Introducing Homestand Sports Today, your go-to daily sports newsletter, bringing you the Canadian angle on the hottest NHL, NBA, footy stories, and more right to your inbox. But wait, there's more. Homestand Sports isn't just another text-heavy newsletter. Every story has its own video featuring our talented hosts like me, Albert Vartanian, giving you a newsletter experience like never before. And did I mention it's a free subscription? Subscribe now at homestand.ca.
Now back to the show.
I want to get into sports, not just sports betting, but advertising overall by regulated operators, because like here in Canada, it's I know it's been a hot button topic in the U.S. and I'm sure you're aware of the Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario taking action and basically limiting the use of athletes in advertising to responsible gambling messaging back at the end of February. And there's been so much backlash in Ontario and across the rest of the country when it comes to advertising. Do you have any feelings on the advertising issue? Is there something you're working with your clients? Or what's top of mind with you when someone brings up advertising and marketing?
So advertising is pretty much what we spend a lot of time on these days with my clients, because it's a really important one, right? I mean, advertising within the sports betting domain and vertical is so vastly different than that of other types of gambling, right? We're not inundated with bingo ads. We're not inundated with lottery ads per se. They're there, but not in the same presentation, right? So a few things. It was no surprise to me to see Canada move in this direction, banning celebrities and athletes from advertisements, very much falling in the footsteps of other more mature markets in Europe. This is something we had seen recently in Spain, Italy, the UK, and it was done with good reason. There had become this normalization within sport that, you know, while the athletes do it, the celebrities are doing it, you should do it too. Now, let's remove the concept of gambling from this. Celebrities have significant power in influencing what consumers buy, what they wear, what they do. And so we would be silly to not think that there is really tremendous power in having a celebrity or an athlete say, yeah, you should try out this gambling product. And when we think about who is often most influenced by a celebrity's endorsement, it's exactly the vulnerable population you just asked me about. So when we are seeing 2 to 3 times the rates of problems in a particular cohort, and we need to figure out how we're going to address that, well, removing one very important component, such as a celebrity endorsement, might be a low impact of sorts way to help migrate those levels down. We're never going to remove them completely, right? We're never going to solve the issue of gambling addiction. Our goal as an ecosystem is to get those rates as low as possible. There are plenty of other opportunities out there for celebrities to be endorsing things that don't have risks of addiction that they can do. Also, I hear the industry. It's not great to lose one of your competitive opportunities, like bringing on a high-profile celebrity. I get it. I really do. Has your revenue really hurt since you had to cease ties with X athlete or Y celebrity? I think you're doing just fine. You know, there's a lot of comparisons these days for gambling to be compared to other, I'm going to call them vices for a lack of a better word, tobacco, alcohol, cannabis. Now, here in the US, we have a congressman who's looking to regulate and pretty much ban sports betting the same way tobacco has been addressed. I think that if the industry were to take a hard look at itself, there are two paths here. You could end up facing the same fate and regulation as tobacco if you continue to deny harm and don't want to make compromises such as this. Or you could end up regulated like alcohol, which do enjoy the pleasure and privilege of having celebrities endorse it, but there are lots, and I mean lots of compromises, at least here in the US, right? You can't actually be on camera drinking. You can't have multiple bottles of beer or whatever in your hand at the same time. You can't appear inebriated. The problem is right now, advertising is so aggressive. It's like the equivalent of having someone on camera binge drinking and then getting in their car and driving away. I believe that a little bit of management and compromise could carry the industry a long way.
I couldn't agree more, Brianne. I think there was a rather, by some operators, a rather handed approach to try to integrate sports media or sports betting and the broadcast when the market opened in Ontario 2 years ago. And a lot of the backlash that we saw here, to be honest, was around NHL games, especially Hockey Night in Canada, which is, you know, to Canadians what Monday Night Football is to football fans in your country. And so I think operators have to be smarter. And I would say, and, you know, something that Paul Burns from the Canadian Gaming Association has talked about, that there would be a maturing at the market at some point and we wouldn't see the bombardment of ads. And to your earlier point, I think the regulators in Ontario were smart in limiting you can't advertise bonuses on commercials in Ontario. And when people talk about the things that Ontario regulators have got right, that's one of them. So I don't want this to be completely dumping all over the industry in Ontario, but they have got some things right.
It's not a dumping on the industry at all, especially in Canada. I do believe that the regulators have done their due diligence and their homework to understand what have been some of the biggest concerns in markets that often had really hands-off regulations, right? They were very high level and everything was the obligation of the industry. I believe Canada serves as a tremendous model for how the industry and the regulator can work collaboratively in order to maximize business opportunities as well as ensure consumer protections. You know, back to one of your earlier comments, Shelley White and the RGC, I believe, are a wonderful conduit for safe, balanced discussions to talk about the interests of those that have suffered harm, the industry's issues, as well as the regulator, and where there's opportunities for compromise. I don't believe it's out of the realm of possibility that as the markets mature and as things become more balanced, that we talk about, is there ever a scenario where someone of notoriety, whether they're a celebrity or an athlete, could have some ability to advertise, maybe with discretion and limitations, maybe. But I think that as the market across the world has kind of been called into question, now is not the time. And maybe there's never a scenario where athletes should be talking about betting on their own games. And I don't know if that has anything to do with addiction or influence of kids. It just might not be appropriate. And I believe Canada could be the first market to have those questions. If I were to have a crystal ball, maybe 5 years from now, it's, is this possible? And would it not have the same negative ramifications we were once worried about because we've been able to scale up the education of the population and parents? And could we make this a little bit more akin to the way we advertise alcohol?
Yeah, and I'd also suggest, Brianne, too, that for branding purposes of an athlete or celebrity, responsible gambling is a great path to go down. And I'm going to ask you in a second about a bunch of the different organizations out there now promoting RG. But from a branding perspective, and the most effective branding I've seen on RG by a celebrity is the Manning family, going back, I think, 3 years ago when we first started covering this industry and their relationship with Caesars. And I remember Archie and Eli and Peyton, this like 45 second spot with them talking about gambling responsibly. And it's a really powerful message. And again, I've been critical. I thought, you know, Connor McDavid's deal with BetMGM, that it took almost 2 years for Connor McDavid to have a responsible gambling ad on with BetMGM. I think that was a mistake on behalf of both the player and their marketing agent and on the operator. And I do think there's a lane. And when you look at explosion in women's sports right now. I would think if you're an organization that's really pushing responsible gambling, having Caitlin Clark deliver that message or a WNBA star, that would be a pretty powerful message.
I agree. I think that there is tremendous amount of power in having someone that is often revered with such influence, communicating the power and importance of responsible gambling. There are lots of campaigns, unfortunately, that kind of fall flat. And I think that they often have one thing in common, and I call it the mommy problem. They all seem very luxury, right? We can't have responsible gaming be the stigmatized thing, right? Responsible gambling has been designed like seatbelts. None of us get in the car and think we're going to get in a car accident today, and so I'll put on my seatbelt. You put it on in case. You take that step as a preventative measure. We developed responsible gambling tools for everyone. And I think that right now it's often only communicated to players in a meaningful way and in a consistent way when someone shows signs of having a problem. And by then, is it really going to do anything? No, the behavioral patterns are already set. So when you see someone of influence normalize these types of things, just like it has the ability to influence, you know, buying and consuming of things, this will have hopefully a positive impact on seeing engagement in these responsible gambling tools. That being said, a lot of people, especially in Europe, are very resentful of responsible gambling. And I've taken a lot of years and time and interviews to understand more about this. Why? And the biggest thing I hear is that the industry communicates responsible gambling about everything the consumer can do. And so one of the things that I often speak to my clients about, whether they're regulators, whether they are lotteries, whether they are sports betting operators, it's to be communicating to your players or your clients or whoever your licensee is, what you're doing, in a quest to keep your players safe. So does that mean I'm going to cut you off if I think that you can't afford this or I see some unhealthy changes? Yeah, maybe I do. The more we make this a concerted group effort that's communicated that we're all in it together, I believe the more efficacious responsible gambling initiatives will be. But right now, there's some hostility from those that have either suffered harm or have seen someone that suffered harm as, why was this all on the player? Your products led me to this. So sometimes I think it's about, I don't want to say falling on the sword, but just like owning, you got to do something in this equation too, as an operator, not just leave it to the player.
That's a perfect segue to my next question. You know, it almost feels like there's a clutter out there right now when it comes to problem gambling advocacy. And, you know, I think back in March, the seven operators got together and announced the Online Responsible Gaming Coalition. And Dr. Jennifer Shally, who's been doing some consulting for the Responsible Gambling Council, is the executive director of that group. And we've seen, you know, the professional sport leagues in North America, they have a coalition for responsible gambling. The players associations for four or five of the major pro sports have a coalition. The operators have their own responsible gambling programs and products. You know, the Canadian Gaming Association, back in December, one of their mandates is to have an action plan this year on responsible gambling. So, and I think there's probably two levels here, Brianna. One is, what advice do you give to players and customers? Like, where do they turn when there's problem gambling? And then to your point, what does the industry do when you have, it's almost like these alphabet organizations. It's almost like, you know, tiered soccer leagues where you have 70 different soccer leagues and you're trying to figure out which one's the elite level and which one is an old fart like me out there in the Sunday morning kicking a ball around. So I guess two-part question. First of all, what do you tell customers when it comes to dealing with problem gambling or people in their lives, people they love? And the second part of it is, what can the industry do to kind of break through this seeming clutter?
Yeah, great questions. Do you remember when Oprah gave away all of her cars? You get a car, you get a car, you get a car. Yeah, you get a coalition, you have a coalition, you too. Absolutely. Why don't you join in? All right. So, as you may know, I tend to sometimes say it like it is, and I don't ever mean disrespect. But the reality is the industry has a big problem. And it's that they often conflate responsible gambling and problem gambling. And sometimes there is an inherent conflict of interest in the industry aggressively pursuing things like problem gambling treatment. Now, a conflict of interest in the sense that they shouldn't be handing it out. They should not be weighing in about effective treatments. They should not be weighing in about when someone can or should come back into the industry. But they should be paying for it as far as I'm concerned, right? These products led to the harm. If you profit, you bear the responsibility to pay for it. But I believe the best thing amass all of this confusion of coalitions is for the industry to stay in its lane, to be aggressively pursuing uncomfortable discussions and decisions about how they're going to do better, both talking to their players and within their day-to-day operations to prevent problems from happening. So does that mean you maybe cut someone off at the expense of your revenue? Maybe. Let's talk about baseline standards. Maybe we're not pushing aggressive bonus promotions because we're starting to worry about those negative consequences within the communities. You know, ensuring that you're only operating in markets that have adequate problem gambling protections is something I totally get behind. You know, making sure that you're giving the money to researchers and you don't get to weigh in on it, and that you've got to live up to whatever the research brings to light, whether you like it or not. Those are my biggest, if I got to give you the advice, that's what I would say. You know, showing that you're committed to this is important. You almost run the risk as an industry operator if you don't join one of these coalitions, right? Because then someone's like, well, you don't care. Well, okay. You know, I do feel for the industry. It seems as though they're always damned if they do, damned if they don't. Pardon my language. But if you're part of a coalition, good, you care about it. But wait, you really shouldn't be doing about that. It should be someone else, right? I do feel for them. It is a fine line. It's an important fine line, though. The real proof is going to come in the pudding when they start to make decisions that highlight to consumers they are willing to compromise their bottom line to ensure the safety of their players. That is the type of products I believe will start or should start arising out of these coalitions. I think the NFL is a great example. From the start, they were like, we're limiting the number of ads. Could you imagine how much money the NFL would make if they had a free-for-all? I mean, everybody would have an ad. That's all we'd see is gambling ads. So I think that the ideas are out there. I think it's just, we need a recalibration. You know, we went all in. We went from, you know, being against it to all in. And now we just need to come back a little bit.
And then I guess in terms of, you know, the players, and again, I think it may be just simple, Brianne, as when you, if you decide you want to be a customer on a regulated sportsbook gaming product, that you take the time when you sign up to read the responsible gambling policies and make sure that you put those mechanisms in place, both limiting the budget you spend, how often you play, and just... You know, Phil Gray, who's a guest in this show quite often, is something he reminds people is when you sign up, make sure you go through the responsible gambling protocols.
I agree. I right now don't love the way that they're often presented and how laborious they are. And they are very text heavy, right? That mommy problem, the little lectury, if you can find them. But yes. As a consumer, it is incumbent upon us to do our due diligence to make sure we're playing on a legal, regulated book, and that we take the time to set those safeguards and guardrails that are most appropriate for us. Do I hope that the industry migrates to offering those things at the time I sign up? Sure. But there's a lot of concern around friction within the UX. Everything is about how do I make this as frictionless and as easy as possible? And right now there's this perception overwhelmingly by the industry that those RG questions are just more friction and a potential deterrent. I think that if we can holistically agree that they are a value add instead of a deterrent or prevention of play, it would be a whole different scenario. We probably wouldn't have to have 2 whole months a year talking about how we need to be doing better by way of consumer safety. It needs to be an everyday thing, and it needs to start with creating an account. I believe that's the secret sauce. It's nothing actually A, that needs to be all that secret, or B, all that special. It's just stop putting a stigma that you only use these things when you got a problem. Use it all the time because they're designed to help you not face yourself with a problem.
Hey, Brianne, final question, because we've taken a lot of your time here today, but one thing that we've heard in Ontario a lot from people at universities and other organizations is that there hasn't been enough funding steered towards research. And in a market that now is 2 years open, I still haven't seen any kind of tangible research that indicates that A, there is a problem gambling issue, or B, that there isn't a problem gambling issue. And it's something, again, you hear people talk the good talk, is that the operators want to see that data. If you talk to universities, they'll say that there's not a lot of funding available from the governments or operators to do that research. Quick thought on that.
Oh, it's a really important one, right? I think the days are over where the industry gets to play the nascent or new card, right? And it's well due for us to have some emerging research about the North American market and how this expansion has impacted rates of problem gambling, right? As we discussed earlier, it's there, but how much is it there? Now, a few states within the US have invested in this, and I have to admit, the results are startling. You know, the state of New Jersey, often heralded as the gold standard for gaming markets, has got 6% of its population with a gambling problem. That's 3 times what we believe the national average is. This is terrifying. I believe that Canada would be smart if they were to look at some of these states and see what the research is emerging as, and saying, we've got to figure out a way to invest in this. We have to know what's going on and if we're facing the same fate. You know, in the absence of grants or federal funds or state funds or province funds, I do think the industry needs to really consider, without influence, right? The conflict of interest is inherently there. So they've got to be willing to just cut the check and let the researchers do their job, no matter what the results show. I believe that it is one of the most important and yet often missing components from almost all gambling policy discussions. We are making regulations and business operations blind, and it will have significant social and economic impacts in the long term. Sometimes it's short term. We don't even have to wait that long. I believe that in the next year, it should become one of the top priorities for all new, emerging, nascent, whatever word we want to use, markets to get a handle on it before it gets out of control. I always talk about American exceptionalism. I'm proud to be an American. I think Canadians feel the same way. I think that there's a lot of ways which we are both pioneers in the way that we approach a number of different things. But we aren't all that different. And we have heard enough from Australia and European markets about what happens when you neglect this component of the market. I mean, the UK have 55,000 kids with a gambling disorder. I don't forecast the US or Canada thinking that is somehow acceptable. I believe that research is the power, or the missing thing here, that could ultimately determine and change the fate of the market for the better. We just got to commit to funding it. And I don't know, you look at the revenue numbers just like I do. I feel like someone could write this check, or maybe they could all do it together, and we could get the answers we desperately need.
Yeah, there's the federal government right now in the Senate. There's a push for a nationwide ban on sports betting advertising. And I wonder if that energy might be better placed towards funding research on problem gambling and coming up with some tangible answers, or steering more money towards gambling addiction. Let's leave it there. This has been a fantastic conversation. Brianne Dura Shawal is the founder and CEO of Dura Shawal Consulting. Brianne, this is long overdue to get you on the podcast, and let's hope we don't take so long to get you back here again.
Oh, thank you so much. This was such a pleasure, and I appreciate you giving the time and energy to this important topic.
Great, thank you. That's it for this episode of the Gaming News Canada Show. As always, you can find our podcast at gamingnewscanada.ca and on the various podcast platforms. Thanks, everyone, as always, for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Gaming News Canada Show. Sign up for our newsletter at gamingnewscanada.ca. Follow Steve McAllister on LinkedIn. Message Steve if you're interested in being a sponsor or featured guest.